Love a rugby league same game multi? Then you've got to check out Picklebet same game multi. Watch your odds and payouts skyrocket when you combine your favorite team's markets, like head-to-head, first try scorer, and winning margin. Picklebet, the next-gen betting app and official sponsor of the NRL All-Stars podcast.
What are you really gambling with?
For free and confidential support, call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.
You'll never know if you don't go. You'll never shine if you don't glow. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid.
And all that glitters is gold.
Only shooting stars break the mold.
Welcome to another episode of the NRL All-Stars podcast. Barnsley here for this week's Talkin' Footy episode. Lots to talk about in rugby league every week. We say it every week, and it's true every week. There has been bombshells galore the last 24 hours. But to talk about all that and more, we have the return of Matty Person. Perso, welcome back to the All-Stars podcast, mate. Hopefully the last couple of weeks have treated you well.
Yeah, it's always good to be here and have a chat a bit of footy with you, Barzy. Nothing doing again.
Oh, as always, Bory, we've got to almost make up headlines in rugby league, and it's not pumping out enough. Yeah, not quite. It's been crazy. We are going to get to some of the big news that's happened in the last 24 hours with coaches and backflips on contracts and all that type of stuff. First of all, we do need to talk about the round and review round 10, as we always do. Before we do, we are having a giveaway, which I mentioned on the Supercoach podcast at the start of the week. So giveaway is fantastic. We've got a first prize and a second prize. First prize, you can choose two tickets to any NRL match of your choice, including State of Origin, and you also get two jerseys of your choice. So if you want to go to a Core Stadium for Game 1 of the State of Origin series with you and someone else and get a jersey each for New South Wales or Queensland, be my guest. If you're the winner, you can choose, or you can just go to a normal NRL game. And for the runner-up, we're going to give away a jersey of their choice, and you can choose anything you want. So if you've already got your club jersey, you're welcome to choose it. Aussie Kangaroos jersey or Origin jersey or whatever you like. So great giveaway that we got, and it's all thanks to one of our partners, oneworldcourier.com.au. So you can jump on oneworldcourier.com.au and check them out. It provides you a platform website where you can compare prices for all different shipping or courier needs. And so certainly all you have to do to enter this draw is sign up with them. And when you sign up, make sure that you just put All Stars as the reference code of where you heard about oneworldcourier.com. As soon as you put All Stars in there on your sign-up form, they'll know that you've come from the podcast. They'll enter you into the draw for these great prizes and take great care of you. So jump in there now. You don't have to own your own business. You could work for a business that might need some courier and shipping, and then oneworldcourier.com.au could be your people, and they'll probably save you a lot of money too. So enter the comp. It'll probably be closing a little bit before the first game of State of Origin, a few days before, and we'll be announcing the winners then. Talking about footy now, round 10 per se. Again, another round that had it all. It certainly was a good round of footy, and I think that's one of the things, like, we keep talking about the decisions and stuff of officials, which do keep, I guess, dominating headlines, but we do get a lot of good footy at the moment. And the first game of the round was the Dolphins and the Manly Seagulls. This was one where I thought that Manly were going to get them. I picked Manly to win, and Manly lost 30-24 against the Dolphins. And, you know, not least of which was because of Tom Trbojevic going down once again, which was big news in this one. He's now out for maybe 8 weeks' time, another hamstring injury. And certainly, you know, he was there until the end, so he only missed the last 12 minutes. But in a game that was in the balance, certainly that's got a bit of an impact. But the Dolphins are a top four team. They're playing very well. They played well in this one. Scored 30 points, so normally that's going to get you the chocolates. And I have to say, there wasn't a lot of missed tackles in this one. Errors were pretty average as well. So it was a reasonable quality game, fairly entertaining.
Yeah, that's what I was going to touch on, Barnes. It was a pretty quality game of football, especially for a Thursday night game. Sometimes, for whatever reason, they could tend to be a bit dour, but it was fairly free-flowing. Both sides completed well, considering that. And, you know, that was one thing I noticed too, that the missed tackles were quite low for a game like that. So the quality game of football for this time of the season, yeah, it's sort of hard to know where Manly were at anyway. I mean, they're sitting at eighth. They sort of winning some games you don't think they're going to win. They've been losing games you think they're going to win. And there, with Tommy Turbo out for a fair stint, it's you sort of expect them to fall down the ladder again.
Yeah, it's going to have a huge impact on them. They're obviously going to probably lose him anyway during Origin. But that was always a scary thing for Manly with these games now against the Dolphins and so forth. They really needed to win these because they're always going to be missing not just Turbo, but also DCE, likely Olakau'atu, potentially others like Jake Trbojevic as well. So Origin period's never really too kind for the Manly Seagulls. They really need to enter into it in a good spot, and they got that loss. That's not going to help. They're going to lose Turbo for even more games than just the Origin games. That's going to hurt them a lot as well. So a lot of pressure on Manly at the moment. I have to say, like I've said before, Dolphins, you know, great win again. And I've tried to give them a lot of credit the last month because they're sort of one of those unheralded teams. When they win, people don't really give them a lot. And they've been top four for a lot of the year. Interesting stat, though. That is only the second time this season that the Dolphins have played a top eight side. And in saying that, Manly, I think people would argue, isn't a top eight side, even though they were sitting in eighth spot. So it probably has to be said that these wins that the Dolphins are putting up, they are going to hit a harder part of the draw soon too.
Oh, yeah, they've been absolutely blessed. I had them at the start of the season with the easiest draw, if there is such a thing. They've only left Queensland. That's the second time they've left Queensland so far as well. And they've got a Tigers home game next week up there, so their draw was very good, but they're banking the wins. You can only play what's in front of you, and they're going along quite nicely. They've had a few injury setbacks too, so they might be able to hang on to a top eight spot this year and not fall away like they did last year.
Yep, very, very, very good chance of hitting the top eight this year. Penrith Panthers 16, Canterbury Bulldogs 10. Very competitive game. This is what I thought it would be. I did think that the Bulldogs would compete a fair bit. It really was right at the end, though, that the Dogs made it within a try difference because Carras scored with 8 seconds to go. But still, I think that if you're a Bulldogs fan and someone said, look, you're going to get within 6 points or even without that try, you know, within 10 points of the Penrith Panthers, you'd be pretty happy with that result. Obviously, again, the big news from this one, Nathan Cleary, 39th minute, gone, ends up he tore his hamstring. That certainly hurt them. They did have young Cole on the bench, though, so I mean, he came in pretty seamlessly. Obviously can't replace Cleary, but it's not like they had to put a back rower in the halves or anything like that, which we've seen some teams do in recent weeks.
Well, the Titans this week have got two hookers in the halves.
Oh, unbelievable, isn't it, some of this? And this one, the completions weren't as good in this one, and certainly there was a lot more missed tackles and things. Like the 54 missed tackles from the Dogs is very high, and it's pretty amazing that they missed 54 tackles and only conceded 16 points to Penrith. And I have to, like, I looked at those numbers and went, look, I thought before that the Panthers have maybe struggled a little bit to score points this season. And then I saw that and I went, geez, is that another stat that just says that that's the case?
Yeah, it's an interesting stat. 54 is a lot. I wonder, sometimes they can be a bit misleading, missed tackles. They can be sort of bump offs of things, which could have been the case in that game. But you would still think of anything. You're going to tell me before the game the Dogs are going to miss 54 tackles and complete it with 73%, 75%, and the Panthers only put 16 points on them. You'd sort of be questioning that line. But, yeah, they are struggling to put points on, but their defence is still strong. They just seem to keep getting the job done. And they're playing nowhere near their best, so they just keep winning. But that Cleary hamstring reoccurrence, that's looking like a real problem for them this season now.
Yeah, and just fairly quietly too, a little under the radar. The last few years now, he has been very hampered by injuries. So you hate to put the injury tag on someone, especially when they're still in their mid-20s, but it's become a problem now, where the last few years he's had multiple injuries, the hamstring being one, also shoulder issue as well. It's a bit of a worry if you're a Penrith fan, because losing him for large chunks, you know, they're good enough to get through the season, but they've got to have him fit and firing for the finals. And certainly, if you're a team, you want to be getting these wins on the board, which they are, because where you spot on the ladder by the time we start September football is going to be really important. And they're probably, I would have that in my back of my mind if I'm a Panthers fan, whether not that they'll make the eight. That's going to happen. But per se, you know, finishing at the pointy end, as we know, is pretty important.
Oh, 100%. And they're going to lose a heap of players over Origin now, too. I know they've got a fair bit of depth there, but it's really going to test their steel this middle part of the season. A
couple of shout-outs for Dogs players, which we, you know, I haven't probably given some of the Dogs enough credit because I think they've been improving quite a bit. Jacob Carraz, he's played some really good football for a couple of years. It's been a little bit more sporadic, but he's gotten pretty consistent now. Three line breaks, an offload, a try, six tackle breaks. He's becoming quite a handful of a winger and one that can equally score tries but also come in and do a lot of work and is a bit of a handful taking hit up. So I thought he was great. And the other one I'll put to you, Perso, that's in red-hot form at the moment, I think Matt Burton's playing fantastic football. He's probably for 5 or 6 weeks now really warmed into it. And I've been a fan of his for a few years. I think that he's had some detractors that have been a little bit unfair on his form and the pressure that's been put on him. But I think that he looks really comfortable now. Once again, he had a line break and try, but he looked pretty, he did trouble them a few times with pretty powerful runs and spurts into holes that closed up quickly. Also had a line break assist. And I think he's had a line break assist in every game pretty much for the last 6 weeks where he's been rolling. I just think that he's been playing some really good footy. It's those two guys I thought were great, but certainly Matt Burton has really put himself in the origin frame. And I don't think that he hurt his chances at all with that performance again against Penrith, which was pretty solid directing that team around the park.
Yeah, I think that's key with the rest of the side coming together for him now. It's sort of all been off the back of him since he signed at the Dogs. That combination he's building up on that left edge with Kikau and Matt O'Carr's really starting to arm along now. He's been playing great footy, Burton. And a lot of that has to do with the forward backs now holding the middle a bit more and gives him a bit more space. And a lot of people I've seen on social media, I like the back Drew Hutchison because he's not a flashy sort of halfback, but he's doing a good job directing him around. He's getting the ball in the right areas for Burton to be able to do his magic.
Yeah, I still do wonder myself whether they're going to be better off with Toby Sexton there.
He's got a lot more flash to him, Toby Sexton. But...
Well, I mean, he had like four, I think it was four try assists and two tries a week prior in New South Wales Cup.
Yeah, I watched that game. He was on fire, but yeah, he's definitely got to be knocking on the door. But Hutchison's sort of steering him around. He's not really doing it. Like, he's not going to be the type of halfback that got to get your four try assists a game. But he seems to be getting that early ball and creating the space for the other guys around him. So Serato obviously thinks he's doing enough at the moment.
I did expect Stephen Crichton to step up a little bit, and I think that he's been a bit quiet now, and I've given him the benefit of the doubt, but it's getting to a point now where the benefit of the doubt's going to start to go away and it's going to become a bit of a problem on his form. He's on a big dollar contract, so that's going to come with some pressure. Once again, like playing against Penrith, that he's obviously left to sign with the Bulldogs, I thought that he would have stepped up a little bit, but again, he didn't really do much. Only had 14 runs. And you'd want him to be a lot more involved, especially if he's one of your high-paid players. But even if you go back to the week prior, he had 7 runs, you know, and it's some people will say maybe that's the structure or the halves or blame Drew Hutchison, like you said, but he's not really going in and trying to find it. You know, he's not stamping his authority as a leader in that team. And I think on his pay packet and his experience level and the big games that he's played, it's about time now, a few months into the season, where he's really got to step it up. I wouldn't say that his origin jersey is in danger for him to start playing better the next couple of weeks, but maybe he's fairly lucky that he's quite an incumbent, because if he wasn't, I doubt that on his Bulldogs form he'd be getting in that state of origin team.
Yeah, he did step it up a little bit on the weekend, but I agree with him the few weeks prior. Like, he hasn't grown for the 7 runs. That's unacceptable from a player like Crichton, especially when you've got Carraz taking the first hit up on that edge. You'd expect him to almost follow with the next hit up on most sets. When you look at the other Dogs, like Jerry had 17 and Carraz had 24, Adokar 15. That's a lot for Adokar, and he had less than Adokar. So you hit the nail on the head there with the price tag and the superstar player that's come across. You'd like to see him just, because he can take the game away from sides. He does get in and fold and does some freakish things. You would like to see a lot more out of him.
The Parramatta Eels dropped another game, unfortunately, losing to the Brisbane Broncos 30-14. I think that at Combank Stadium, I thought that the Eels might be up for a little bit of an ambush, but I still tipped the Broncos. I think a lot of people expected the Broncos to blow them off the park, which wasn't the case. Big news from this one was obviously the torn bicep for Adam Reynolds. And look, it's a terrible blow for the Broncos. It's certainly terrible for Adam Reynolds. And at his age as well, and at the stage of his career, having that type of injury, it's going to be a long road of recovery for him. The Broncos still handled it well. You know, I thought the last few weeks, including this game, Mam has played a lot better. He's played a lot more like a half than an individual talent, which is really important for Brisbane now that Reynolds is gone. And obviously Walsh is someone as a fullback that can step up and deliver on the playmaking duties, which he did again with some attacking stats and a try himself. So they've got the players there, Perso, to mask Reynolds being gone, but they certainly, even in this game, struggled a little bit with the kicking and with the leadership there, and that's only going to get worse as the weeks go on now with Reynolds out long term.
Yeah, it's not ideal, is it? They really rely on him a lot when they're playing their best football. And we'll be honest, in that game too, the Eels were pretty ordinary. Well, they still did put 30 points on, but the Broncos put 30 points on them. But if they were humming along, I reckon that would have been closer to 50 with the amount of ball they dropped. And also they're going to hit an Origin too coming up. You're going to lose a couple of leaders like Haas and Carrigan as well. So for a few weeks, it's going to be interesting to see how they roll along.
Yeah, or Walsh with that duo as well.
Madden was doing a decent job too when he was coming in, but he's injured as well now. So it's going to be a test for him, that's for sure.
For the Eels, I guess the lone bright spot to mention, because you mentioned they didn't play great and they didn't, but young Blaise Talangi, he showed some really good, really good pace and some really good attacking prowess. Yeah, these three line breaks.
Well, putting him in the centres of 5-8, he was gone.
Yeah. And look, he was hard to tackle and he just got that. I try not to cliche. He looks like a footballer. Just with how he moves and he runs, it's pretty smooth. And he just seems to do it so easily. He's obviously got some errors in him and he's pretty raw. He's had four errors on the night and certainly looked suspect a couple of times at fullback. But in saying that, he was really hard for him to tackle. And he made his three line breaks. He had a few others that he could have got through as well.
Yeah, he's not a really largely built fullback either. He racked up 215 run metres and seven tackle busts. He looked dangerous sort of every time he got the ball. There was one shining light for the Eels, that's for sure. They definitely found his position. You wonder if he can keep that up, that they might move Gutherton to another position when he gets back, because he's starting to get a bit long in the legs with a few niggling injuries and things like that. Maybe not this season, but you know, coming seasons, if players can continue to develop.
Yeah, it seems like coming seasons they could do that. I feel like that they could put Blaise at centre and just sort of ease him into some NRL games with his experience level, and then maybe look to move him and Gutho swapping from centre to fullback next year. That might be an option for them. I guess the other thing too is I like him at fullback in attack, but Gutherson's...
It's got a lot of work to do there. Gutho's one of the best defensive fullbacks in the conference.
Yeah, exactly. Like the Gutho's defensive work and leadership at the back is probably pretty unheralded. He's very good at that, and that's something that is important for that Eels side. So we'll wait and see. It's going to be very interesting. Your Tigers lost a close one, 20-14 versus the Knights. They scored in the 79th minute. So, I mean, you had a shot at a win trying to get it to golden point, but...
It was a close bludger of a game, to be honest.
Well, I guess it's two teams that don't really have a huge amount of firepower at the moment, isn't it? You could look at it two ways as a Tigers fan. You know, do you look at it as they competed and got close again? So, I mean, that's good. They were in the hunt.
Yeah, this effort there, yeah. But the completion rates by both sides were pretty good. Tigers, mate, when they did make errors, they were costly ones. They just can't seem to stay in the game for 80 minutes at the moment.
And you're going to lose a few out of this one as well. Most notably, Bateman's going to be out pretty long term now as well. So, I mean, it's not a roster that's built to withhold many injuries.
No, you sort of wonder whether Bateman's actually that big of a loss, to be honest. He's not as, nowhere near as good as a footballer he was back in 2016 at the Raiders, but sort of, you still, every time you watched him last year and this year, even under Benji, you still sort of don't know where he fits in that side. Like, he's shuffled around from edge to lock and, well, his experienced players always handy down on the field, but yeah, we'll see how they go without him. But everything's on Coruscant. They just can't click their attack. If Coruscant's not creating it, then there's nothing happening.
Papa Lee had a good game. A couple of tries, a couple of line breaks, and looked a bit more like the Papa Lee from the Eels days. So, I mean, that was a bit of a shining light for him on form, but they're in a bit of strife at the moment, I think. And, one of the guys that put him in strife on the weekend, I mentioned Papa Lee having a good game. Bradman Best just absolutely dominated that side of the field and just pushed players off for tries and line breaks like they were, you know, under eights. It was a pretty dominating performance, my best. And it was always a worry as well, the Tigers' edges. It's not going to get any easier for them going forward with those combinations that they've got there defensively, those edges and towards the outside backs and wings. It's pretty susceptible on both sides, really.
The best was always going to be a handful for that right edge for the Tigers. And then when the sniper shot the staff at Tower, he did his hamstring again. They shuffled Bateman out there, and then Bateman got injured and he's just having a field day. He would have had a field day even if that didn't happen, to be honest. But that edge defence has just been perennially bad for about 10 years now.
Well, best numbers, 3 line breaks, a try assist, a line break assist, 2 offloads and 11 tackle breaks. I think someone might have mentioned to him State of Origin's coming up soon.
They're good numbers.
The Dragons, 28 over South Sydney, 14. So the Rabbits' woes continue. This was a game where the South Sydney team didn't look great on paper, but you knew that they had those spine veterans there that could possibly get them the win. Latrell Mitchell was returning. And look, Latrell scored 2 tries, which looks good on the stat sheet. He looked remarkably unfit to me. He wasn't covering good ground at fullback. Some people might bring up the point that that's not the first time that's happened. He doesn't normally cover good ground, and that's maybe the case. But he had obviously a real bad error there where he didn't clean up the ball. And it is his first game back, so we've got to take that into account. But if Souths are going to win games, it is going to be off the back of Mitchell, Walker and Cook probably, I guess. And really, you know, we're still not seeing it from them against the Dragons. The Dragons were reasonably convincing in the end, 28-14, and that was a needed win for them as well. But that does leave South still on the bottom of the table, Perso.
Yeah, it's almost with the impending news, which we'll talk about later, obviously, with the coaches next year. But you know, it's almost like they put the queue in the rack for this season, isn't it? All the drama they've had going on, and JD getting the punt, Mitchell burning out. And you see that he could be the biggest player in the game, Mitchell, but you just see these games where his effort's just not there. Like, he first came back, you'd think he'd be, especially with all the guys out and all the young blokes around him, you'd think he'd be just going in and charging and taking the tough carries and saying, come on, boys, go with me. But he's just not that sort of player, even in the dire situation where they need him to live.
Yeah, he's just, unfortunately, and you can say this negatively sometimes, and I don't mean to say this negatively, it's just a fact, he's just not a leader. And Souths need a superstar that's a leader at the moment. And if you don't have one, it's a big problem with that roster and those players that they've got at the moment. And it might be an unfair burden to put on Latrell Mitchell, particularly at the moment. You know, maybe he is a star player that's your second star or third star on a premiership winning team. Being the number one guy, I'm not sure it's for him. And that's not a big knock. Like, there's plenty of players that just have extreme talent, but they're not the superstar leader of your team. And I just don't think that he is. Unfortunately for them, it's not Cody Walker. He's on the twilight of his career now. It's not Cook for the same reason. And someone like Cam Murray, who's been given the official leadership through the captaincy, isn't someone that can do it either. So it does.
It's not Cam's fault either. He just doesn't look like he's that kind of guy, at least at this stage of his career.
Yeah, I mean, you almost think that Bennett coming in, which we'll talk about, needs to go to market and find another star or representative player that can kind of take that burden and lead that team around the park.
Yeah, for sure. Even a guy like Jamal Fogarty would fit well into that sort of role. If there's no like higher level halfbacks that are available.
Well, at least it's a good win for the Dragons, who desperately needed it as well. The next game was a bit of a shock. Cronulla Sharks 25, the Melbourne Storm 18. I initially tipped Cronulla, so I didn't think it was going to be a shock. But as soon as Nicho Hynes got ruled out on the day of the game, I thought, well, there's no way with the Sharks' record against not only top four teams, but against the Melbourne Storm. It's a terrible record down there. I think they've lost 80% of their games the last 5 years or something in Melbourne. I just gave them no hope, really. And lo and behold, they came through with a victory without Hynes, and that's hugely important. We have to say in this game, Melbourne Storm obviously had no Hughes and no Pappenhausen, but you know, down in Melbourne, Melbourne should have won this. And it's a tale of really two different stories here. One of them is going on script completely with the Storm of what we've been saying all year, and that is they're just not clicking enough, and they're just not they're not showing that they are one of the top teams that we keep giving them credit as being. And for the Sharks, it's the opposite, right? They're flipping the script completely because their big thing this season, but also all in the last couple of years in the Hines Fitzgibbon era, is that they can't beat top four teams. And they've just done that, and not only done it, but done it emphatically without their only superstar, really, in Nico Hines.
Yeah, that was some kind of win, wasn't it, down there? It's always hard for every side that travels down there. But as you said, the Sharks, I don't have one there, but it was about 2013 or 18 or something. But, yeah, with Nico Hines going out before the game, and young Atkinson really stepped up with that. And, you know, the Sharks had their issues this year with injuries, but they seem to be getting along to that point in that structure under Fitzy, where they now got that next man in mentality, and they're all buying into what he's feeding them, and you get the one guy out, one guy in. They know their role, and they're worried about their role and nothing else. No one's trying to take on more of a burden, and the defence is starting to click a bit more this season too. So that was a fantastic win, and they're sitting on the top of the ladder. So hopefully for them, they'll be aiming for a top four finish, and they might be able to step up a little bit further in the semis this season.
I thought it was a really good game plan from the Sharks too. Need to point that out. They obviously know that without Hines, you know, the outside backs and outside tries maybe aren't going to work as well, even though I did think that Melbourne are pretty susceptible, especially when they're starting like Grant Anderson on one wing and Warbrick on the other. But their forwards are the ones that really laid the platform and scored. Like, you had Tapua going in the 23rd minute under the sticks. You had Kafusi doing the same. And then I felt like that we had our big boy Tommy Hazelton, our fan favourite, going over, but he actually had a try assist for one of those. But you've got two front rowers that are scoring your tries there out of your four tries, and they really did hit him in the middle of the storm, and that worked out really well. So, I mean, we talk about the edges, and particularly like on either wing for that game especially, and Warbrick's defensive woes that he's had this season, but you know, the Storm, even in the middle, are looking a bit susceptible as well. So defensively, they're not where they need to be. They've always got the points in them per se, but when you don't have Jerome Hughes and Pappenhausen, all of a sudden that becomes hard too. I think we saw that in this one. 18 points isn't enough for the Storm, and the defence wasn't there either. So it's a bit of a... It was probably a perfect game to show where the Storm's at for me.
Which is what we've sort of... We mentioned that a few times recently.
Yeah, it really showed it there. You know, it really showed it. So, I think the Sharks have well and truly earned their spot on top of the table at the moment with that victory. And the Storm, big question marks as to whether they're a top four or a top eight team and how far they can go. Allianz Stadium. The Roosters, 38. The Warriors, 18. The Roosters started off absolutely red hot. They had five tries by the 45th minute. And the Warriors had none, and it was really all over Red Rover. The 49th minute, Kosi goes over and gives them some hope. But I did think that it was the 18 points that the Warriors scored, it was as much of the Roosters sort of putting the cue in the rack a little bit. And I mentioned that I think at halftime, Robinson would have been slightly disappointed. I'm sure post-game he would have mentioned, you know, you need to be more lethal than this, because we saw them put 60 points on the Dragons on Anzac Day. And I think that if they were consistent for the 80 minutes, this was a 60-point score. It was there. But in saying that, geez, the Roosters have some red-hot form players at the moment. Dom Young had six line breaks. Angus Crichton scored two tries and went over for a third that got disallowed.
He's turned back the clock a couple of seasons, hasn't he?
Yeah, and I mean, Manu, Tedesco, Sam Walker, the guys that you expect are all playing great too. It's really humming, and for the Warriors, it's a big concern, because we pointed out the week before that their defence hasn't really been quite up to it, but they're not finding as many points either, and SJ has gone down with an injury after this. So I think if you're looking at form, I think that the Roosters over the last month are the form team in the competition and one that you're scared to have to defend against. Whereas the Warriors have actually gone from a hard-nosed defensive team last year that you probably didn't really want to play to a team that you're not really concerned about at the moment. So, it was a big victory for the Roosters. Could have been a lot bigger, I think.
Yeah, the Roosters are playing the way we've sort of been expecting them to the last couple of pre-seasons. And you look at the roster, everyone's, you know, having them in their top all from the start of the season. They've had some pretty slow starts in recent seasons, but they seem to have found their mojo a bit earlier than previous seasons. Like, it's the last two seasons they've come home with a wet sail, and they've been languishing even outside the top eight for a fair part of last season, and they've strung a heap of wins together at the end of the season. But if they can maintain this type of form, they had a red-hot chance of taking this out this season. This is what we all know the Roosters can do when they're in form. If they can stay a reasonably healthy roster, they're going to be certainly a handful. The Wires have just sort of fallen off a cliff at the moment, haven't they? Even before the injury started to rack up, they don't look what the side they were last season. And losing SJ, I think, is another one that's out for a fairly lengthy period. That's really going to test them.
Yeah, it's interesting the team that they've named this week. Like they've put Timmy Martin to 7, and Charnes at 6. And
I don't think he's ever played 5-8 in first grade, has he?
I don't know. I think he's played centre, but he definitely hasn't played 6. And neither of those guys are dominant playmakers. And
no, they're both runners.
Then you've got Tuipiki at fullback, who's also a runner and also someone who's only played a handful of first grade games. So I looked at that side and went, I was worried about where you'd find the points before. But SJ's at least there. But removing SJ and naming that lineup,
Metcalf's going for long term as well. So
yeah, I can't see him scoring per se. How do you see them? How do you see this Warriors side, you know, changing things, because they're looking at 6 on the trot losses now.
Their main play at the moment is Egan to AFP crashing over. As he relies on forwards at close to the line with the crash play. That's it. Yeah, I don't see where the points are coming in that side. Look, I can't see where the shape's coming from in that sort.
No, I'm not just saying this as a Roosters fan, but I'm finding the Roosters attack a joy to watch, and the Warriors, I'm finding the opposite. I think I'm going to find the opposite now. Hopefully SJ's not too serious. Still waiting for more word on his injury diagnosis and how long he will be out. The Gold Coast Titans 20 upset the North Queensland Cowboys 18. I expected a good Cowboys win. I thought that they would put 30-plus points at a minimum on the Gold Coast Titans. So certainly the 20 points the Titans scored wasn't a worry, because a 30-20 scoreline wouldn't have surprised me. I'll just say it off the top. The thing that was bad, the start was terrible. Like the 20 points the Titans scored were by half time. It was 20-0. The Cowboys were down. Awful first half. But then, like, obviously the Cows scored 18 in the second half and actually had a shot at victory after a 78th-minute conversion from Scott Drinkwater. But it was just insane how many times that they had errors in their outside backs. Valame was over for tries twice and stuffed it. And Val Holmes had a terrible one where he was across the line. He just had to drop. Oh. But he stayed upright and kept going. And it gave the Titans defender a chance to poke the ball out before he got to the ground. It's really, really bad stuff. And it has been mentioned to me a couple of times by some good pundits, including some of the guests that come onto the All Stars podcast. Holmes hasn't had a good season. He's been pretty bad this year. And we've terrible. Seen that again there. That possibly cost them the win there.
Even defensively this year, Holmes, he's missing tackles. Like, he's normally one of the better defending centres in the competition. He's been touched up by guys he would not expect to touch up. Val Holmes, that's for sure. It's almost like it's an effort attitude problem at the Cowboys at the moment. They're just not putting in the effort in defence, which is correlating to some of their attack now. They're 68% possession in that game, 44 missed tackles. So you're not winning games when you're playing like that. Winning against the Titans, who, to their credit, were actually quite good.
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like, the Titans are doing, getting more out of what they have on that roster at the moment, I think.
Mm.
And the Cowboys are getting far less than what they have on that roster. And that's a big deal. Like, when you're talking about guys that are actually in form for the Cowboys, Nanai's been really good the last few weeks. You know, he's been doing the things that got him a rep jumper last year. He'll play State of Origin. Look, Drinkwater's, I think, tried, but he hasn't been as effective the last few weeks, but you can't put much on him. But outside of that, like, yeah, Cotter's played decent, but everybody else, I don't think they've been going very well for the Cows. And you're right, because that effort thing, like, you see the defence sometimes. The scramble's not there at times. The help isn't there at times. The chase isn't there. And you nailed it with the attitude, I reckon.
That's like they've gone back to the way they were 2 years ago. But they look good one season, horrible the next. Good one season, horrible the next. They were good last year. It looks like they're horrible again this year. I don't know how Todd Payton turns that around.
No, I don't either. And I actually think that this could be a bit of a crossroads for that Cowboys team, yeah, as it's currently structured, with Todd Payton there as well, because Payton's had one season where everyone had to stand back and say, well, maybe we were wrong about Todd Payton, because he did have some detractors for his first couple of years at North Queensland. But now all of a sudden that's one season out of four, and you have to go, well, geez, that's not really what success looks like. It's a bit of a worry because that might have just been an outlier. And they did have a very good draw that year too, it has to be said. So, look, it's interesting what happens with the Cowboys for the rest of this season because we're almost at the halfway point. For the Titans, per se, coming out of this one, a lot of injuries.
Yeah, they decimated. Turned to players they didn't need to go down to.
So, I mean, AJ Brimson's obviously the biggest one, but they've, like you said, they named Verrills and Randall in the halves this week. It's that's not going to work for them.
Yeah, Aaron Clark and Hooker. similar to what you said about the Warriors this week, I don't know where their points are going to come from, but fine, they've got to turn out this week.
Yeah, and if you're struggling to find points and you're a team that also can't defend very well, it's not a good recipe for success. So let's see what Dez has up his sleeve because the mad scientist is going to have to come up with something really different this week. But real shame because Brimson especially scored a try again
this
week.
He's been playing well too.
He's looked fantastic. So it's some good footballers going down at the moment. That actually segues us really nicely into the next segment of the podcast, and that is the amount of injuries that's happening at the moment. So before we move along, we need to take a quick break to introduce you to a partner of the NRL All-Stars podcast, Bonus Bank. You can go to www.bonusbank.com.au today to check them out, sign up for free, or go straight to a paid plan to access all the different benefits that Bonus Bank has. But basically, Bonus Bank is Australia's number one match betting website. So it's not gambling. It provides a profitable side hustle for anyone who likes their betting by taking advantage of promotions and bonus bets that you can make, giving you a risk-free, tax-free income every week. So Bonus Bank has software and calculators that do all the work for you. It's semi-automated and it compares over 90 bookies across Australia as well to give you information on all in one place. It's also got its own app that you can do it on. It's also got several other features like betting and bonus calculators, tutorials and free education on how to make money from the bookies, Australia's biggest match betting Discord community you get to join as well, odds match software, full customer support, and a whole heap more. There's so many benefits, it's crazy. So if you want to compare offers and promos all in one place across bookies and learn how to make some extra income through the bookies in Australia, then Bonus Bank is well worth a try. Go and sign up today with a range of their plans. You can go completely free just to trial them, or you can go straight to a paid membership, and the different membership tiers will give you a whole heap of different features that are well worth it because, look, you get the money back anyway with the profits that you'll probably make. So sign up by referencing All-Stars as your code on the site, and you'll get a special sign-up offer as well for a membership today. Bonusbank.com.au. Go get in there. Australia's number one side hustle for anyone who likes their betting. Next segment of the podcast, and that is the amount of injuries that's happening at the moment. It's been thrown about that this is the worst injury season ever. There's been a lot of different theories thrown around, including the pace of the game. It did come out that there is more ball in play this year than we've seen before, and a lot of conspiracy theorists around it as well. Certainly all the media outlets have been talking about whether we're running the athletes too hard, whether we're pushing the envelope too much and getting too much speed into the game. There were some really interesting stats, and I will credit and thank NRL Physio for his show and everything that he does because he had some really interesting numbers, and there were some other numbers I looked at as well. But pretty much what the numbers say, if you're looking at the last 5 years, there isn't more injuries per round, really, than what there has been before. In fact, we've had other seasons that have had more than this. You know, you're getting, as far as injuries that keep players out of games, you know, it's just over 13 around at the moment for this season, and that's not more than normal. Certainly hamstring injuries have been up lately, but I think what's happened is it's happened to star players,
yeah.
And when it happens to star players, people take more notice of it, and it has a greater impact on the league, has a greater impact on the game and the clubs and the results as well. And it's just more influential players, and that's just unlucky. You go back other years, you'll find the same amount of injuries or even more, but it's guys that are sort of bench forwards and stuff, which you don't really notice as much or miss. So I don't think that it's an injury epidemic. I just think it's probably unfortunate the amount of stars that we have getting injured at the moment.
Yeah, well, that is your typical media hype's absolutely blown out of proportion. But having said that, I can't remember a season where so many gun players have gone down, but there's certainly not more injuries than normal. It's definitely got nothing to do with the speed of the game. That one outlier season when they were, before they tuned up the six again rule, you could probably argue that the pace was getting a bit too much, but it's fine at the moment. You touched it exactly what I was going to say. Like, no one remembers a journeyman bench forward going down and doing his ACL, but they all remember when the Stars go down. So, of course, there's been so many star players going out with lengthy injuries. I think that's why everyone sort of is there some injuries this year.
Yeah, and it is unfortunate ones, and it's going to affect the State of Origin series quite a bit. And certainly the NRL will probably be concerned because you've got star players. You know, people come through the gates and pay money to see Kalyn Ponga, to see Tom Trbojevic, to see Nathan Cleary. Having these guys go down is very big. And then you've got some of the most dominant forwards in the game, like Tino Fasuamaali, going down as well for the season. Adam Reynolds, another one. Like, there's a lot of long-term star injuries happening. But it's just unfortunate. I don't think there's anything sinister there, and I don't think there's anything you particularly change. People probably need to remember, per se, rugby league's contact sport, and we talk about it with some of the charges and the rules and things. In a contact sport where basically when you drill down to it, if you made an idiot's guide to what rugby league is, it's hitting the guy with the ball as hard as you can, and if you got the ball, running as hard as you can at the guy that's trying to hit you. Now, if you're doing that, there's going to be injuries and you're going to get hurt, yeah.
Injuries are going to happen. Yeah. It's not a game for everyone.
So, Fifita signing news. So, we were going to talk about how Fifita signed with the Sydney Roosters.
Better put the health check out for Barnsley, do we?
Well, he's now not signing, and he's now this morning signed a contract, or taken up his contract option with the Titans to remain there for 2 more years. Look, I have mixed emotions on this run as a Roosters fan. I initially thought, oh, great signing. And look, I don't care how many back rowers or stars or whatever that you've got in your side already, Fifita is the best attacking forward in the game to me. I think that he has been for the best part 100%. Of 3 years. He's the best one. So, I mean, even if you've got a superstar one in Angus Crichton, if you've got a chance to upgrade and sign the best one, you sign the best one. So,
which you probably would have moved Crichton to the other edge.
Well, and that was the thing with the signing. Like, I was a little bit, not perplexed, but I disappointed with some of the media coverage, but also expected that they started the negative train going and trying to get the clickbait going, where it was like, well, Angus Crichton's going to leave now and, you know, all this stuff.
Crichton's watched edges all his career.
Well, that's the thing. And I pointed this out on several of the forums and stuff. You know, Crichton's played both sides. And in fact, Fifita's played both sides. Everyone laments the times that he gets shoved to the right. You know, he had half a season doing that not long ago because of Bo Fermor smashing it on the left. You know, it was, they both played a remarkable amount of games on the opposite edge.
Yeah. When Crichton first became a name at South, he was playing right edge.
Yeah. So I do think that ultimately that would have been the Roosters' plan, that they would have offered Crichton a contract and happily had both of them. And I, you know, sort of salivated at that. But when Angus spoke to the media, it was evident that he was a bit upset about it. And I had mixed emotions about it. And then when I saw the backflip, and I sort of was relieved. And it's a bit strange, per se, because, you know, I do rate Fifita as one of the best forwards, if not the best forward in the game. And I was relieved that we didn't sign him anymore. So that's more about me being happy to keep Angus. Hopefully we can now, and maybe not upsetting the apple cart too much. But how did you see it all with how it's unfolded?
But when it first happened, I was just excited as an NRL fan to see Fifita go into that system. He would have been absolutely devastating on that left edge, Jordan, in my opinion. Having said that, Crichton would be the form back rower of the competition so far this season. So, I mean, if he can keep that up, you're not really losing a lot. But imagine them. That's what I was thinking. I just thought automatically that Crichton would go to the right edge, or they'd swap from maybe in that system. Fifita could play right edge and Angus would stay where he is. And imagine that. It's the most damaging second row combination on the edges I've seen in a hell of a long time.
Oh, I would have loved to have seen it. There is a gluttony of back rowers, but one of the things that doesn't get the clicks is the common sense approach at actually analysing that roster. And Fox Sports aren't going to do it for you, but I certainly will. Nat Butcher came through the juniors as a middle forward. He was a hard-working 13, and he was the whole time. And even when he came into the NRL, he was, but he transitioned to being a great edge player for a couple of years. But even in the last 2 seasons, he's moved to the middle a lot. He's even started prop per se.
That was sort of due when Boyd Cordner started going down with the head knocks. He started to play on the edge. That was the reason.
Yeah. So, I mean, to me, it's really easy. You move Nat to the bench. You reduce Radley's minutes a bit because he's probably been playing too many anyway. And you use Butcher at 13 and even potentially at front row for 10, 15 minutes because you're going to have Jared going as well, which is going to leave a hole, which they're not going to recruit for because they're going to put the minutes around within. So who else are you left with? Well, Egan Butcher's been transitioned into a front rower anyway. Satili's been told that he could negotiate elsewhere, and I love Satili, but it makes sense to let him go. But he's really the only casualty, potentially. As far as Siwa Wong goes, Siwa Wong could be the only backup edge back rower they have. They just transitioned that back to the middle. So I actually saw it moving forward okay. I didn't have a big issue with it, but I did want to sign Angus. So I was, in a way, happy that it's all happened, because I'd rather keep Angus since he's been there, you know. And yeah, so I haven't worked out being – it hasn't ended up upsetting me that we don't get Fifita anymore.
As a Chooks fan, you wouldn't want to lose Angus to gain Fifita. You'd want them both to still be there, which is – I would have thought that that's what the plan was, to have them both there, Butcher back to the middle. As you said, Hargroves is retiring, so you got Collins, and then you got a lot of young blokes in the middle with White and May. So that's 100% what Butcher's role would have been, roving between lock and prop, and then you've got a ready-made replacement if one of the guns go down as well to switch back to the edge. So I thought that was a really good move by the Chooks, but unfortunately, you won't get to see it. As I said before, I was excited as an NRL fan. It'd be explosive in that sort.
Yeah, and for those that didn't see as well, like, the Roosters did put out a statement to say that they've actually withdrawn the offer. Now, a lot of people have jumped on that and said, oh, look, it's, you know, the Roosters saving face or whatever. Look, it's just the facts of the matter are this, right?
Part and parcel of the game.
It's just the facts, all right? It's Fifita has said that he's got second thoughts. That doesn't mean that he's left or jumped out of the contract. He may well have. Very much he may have just left and stayed at the Titans and left that contract. But he hadn't, and the Roosters decided to pull it because they didn't want anybody who wasn't 100% committed. Maybe they rethought it as well. So I tend to think that...
not the first time the Roosters have done that either.
It isn't, and I will also, for those people saying that Fifita had already walked down on it, just point out that it's not the first time either that people have had second thoughts on a contract and ended up staying. Abby Corrissau.
Common practice
Tigers.
Now.
Abby Corrissau for your Tigers. It was Tigers were sweating it for 2 weeks for the cooling off period and stuff, because Appy was considering not doing it. And in the end, he went through with it. And that's happened several times, particularly with some star players. Well, I mean, even White at Souths last year, during that first week after the signing, he had some second thoughts and thought about staying at Canberra, supposedly. It happens. They don't always turn their back on it.
Go back about a decade when DCE was probably the first big name that did it.
Yeah, that's right.
And there was a massive blowout when he decided not to go to the Titans and stay at Manly. And then not long after that, Tedesco did the same thing with the Raiders when he was at the Tigers. Pretty good. It happens a lot these days. Yeah. And that's the rules there, the 10-day cooling off period. The club that they're currently at gets a rebuttal to see if they want to keep their player. I don't have a problem with it.
No, it's fine. And look, I'll point out that as much as people also backflip, the same people that have doubts on their contract decisions end up staying and going through with it anyway. I just think that the Roosters legitimately didn't want that circus, and if somebody wasn't 100% committed to being there, they didn't. They just wanted to move on quickly, and they needed to.
100%. So, not in their culture, but they're pretty quick to hit that nail on the head.
Yeah, so I mean, look, I've got no problem with either party and how they've really conducted it. I will just say, and I don't mean this to be negative to David Fifita, but like, he's done a official Daily Telegraph story that's just come out this afternoon and stuff, saying that ultimately it was him wanting to play under Des Hasler and also be with his family that made him decide to take up his option at the Titans. Now, that, and people talk about the Roosters' lip service. Like, I mean, David Fifita's family didn't change and the coach didn't change either. They were the same as when he was deciding for 2 weeks on what he wanted to do and then signing a contract with the Roosters. So, I mean, I'm just going to throw that out there at you too, Perso.
I'd say most of that is, you know, well, he maybe was always signing again with the Titans, and the player managers just put it out there to see what the other gun clubs are going to offer him, and then they go back to the Titans and say, well, you can keep him if you put a bit more mayo and seasoning on the top of what you offered.
Well, they're adamant that they haven't given him anything else other than his 2-year option.
I'd be surprised about that.
Yeah, well, wait and see.
When the Chooks were offering 4.
Yeah, the other positive, like, and there is another big positive out of this, is for the Gold Coast Titans Club, which we haven't really spoken about. It is really, really positive for them and their fans.
Oh, they kept Tino as well. So,
yeah.
A couple of great long-term signings.
And Fifita is a, he's a unicorn forward. Like, he's someone that can do things that other forwards can't. Like, you don't normally want to hang up too much money on too many forwards, especially if you're pretty thin in your spine. But Fifita's a guy that can double as a spine player for them. He's really important in their attack. So, well done to the Gold Coast Titans and your fans. You get to keep a superstar player. That is the positive out of it all, right? And, I mean, I'm sure a lot of the fans also think it's positive the Roosters don't get a good player, even though they've got money to spend.
Yeah, better be a lot. I haven't seen a lot today so far, but I reckon the Passagers will be blowing up and, sombrero and all the rest of it. Lot to see stay there, but it's a massive coup to keep those two guys, and they're two guys you can build that pack around. You can go looking for your journeyman and your working journeyman and stuff to fill the holes in that forward pack, and if they can keep AJ Brimson there long term, there is a good side in that Titan side somewhere.
I do need to take a little jab before I move along here, though. Can I just say, Gordon, and look, part of this podcast too, for those listening, like, it's meant to be an honest fans' perspective podcast without any of the BS or double talk or agendas that a lot of the media has. And it also is commentary on some of the media stories and things that do come out. And Gordon Tallis was an absolute muppet on NRL 360 the other night. I could not believe his argument, and he's obviously been affiliated with the Titans and stuff, so there's a fair bit of bias there. I don't just label bias to people who maybe have some sort of affiliation unless they actually show it, because I think that's a bit unfair. He shows it. And he turned around, Perso. I could not work out how he was trying to build this argument, saying that the Roosters have got David Fifita on $300,000 a year. And everybody else was bemused. And he's like, well, they have, because he already had $1 million a year from the Titans for the first 2 years if he stayed. And the Roosters have given him 2.3 over that period. So, you know, he's going million, the same. And then the third year, he's only getting paid $300,000. And so, Gordy, where's your maths coming from, mate? And then he brought it up again. He's like, there's a $700,000 difference in that last year. So, mate, he's getting paid, as Brace said, he's getting paid $850,000 a year. What are you going on about? But he's just mounting this argument. And I've also got to just defend David Fifita a little bit. Like, Gordon's argument as well was, why would a player go somewhere where they're going to get paid less? And excuse me, but at the end of the day, and this is for,
they all did it at the Broncos when he was
happens
there.
All the time. But aside from it happening all the time, Perso, I just found myself going, you know what? The more this argument goes on with Gordon and some of these other media personalities about players taking less or whatever, the more I just want to turn around and say, you know what? That player's a person. It is up to them. If exactly. I want to take $500,000 less a season, legitimately, because I want to, I will. Because I prefer to live there. Maybe my girlfriend's in a different state. I don't want to have a long-term relationship. Maybe I want to get married and have a family. Maybe this, maybe... But at the end of the day, it's my decision. It's none of your business. Why should anybody else tell me what contract I should be accepting? It's my contract. It's my work. And I just think that gets a little bit forgotten in all this. Like, oh, well, he's taking $200,000 or less. He shouldn't be. He should be. Why?
Yeah. He's the last person, Barnes, that should be going on about that, because he didn't want, he wanted to take a contract with the Broncos and the Dragons and release him, so he sat out a season.
Yeah, exactly right. Like, he should know all about it. But I don't know how we got to this point where if a player takes more money and chases it and leaves their club for a couple hundred thousand more a year, they get smashed by everyone. Yeah, oh, he's just after the money. He's not interested in premierships, blah, 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 no loyalty.
Exactly.
But then they do the opposite and they go, well, I'm going to take a pay cut. I'm going to chase a premiership. I want to be an Origin player, blah, blah, blah. Oh, why wouldn't you take the money for? Like, it's a really bad spot to be in, and the media's got a little bit to answer for there.
100% they do. Tallis should know better anyway, because in the back end of the late 90s and early 2000s, they all took pay cuts to keep that side together and stay in Brisbane. They could have got a lot of money elsewhere. You hear Denham Kemp talk about it. He took money over in the Warriors and wished he never left.
And there's a lot of those stories, right? So, I mean, look, at the end of the day, it's a player's decision and money is only one thing. And I think that everybody that might think the same as Gordon might want to have a think about their own job, because, you know, a lot of people in Australia can turn around and probably get paid more going to a different company or doing a different job or getting promotion, and you choose not to. And there's a lot of reasons why people choose not to.
100%.
Coach signings, Perso. Couple of big ones.
Mm.
First one, Ricky Stewart extends with the Raiders until 2029. I think that the length was a bit surprising, and it certainly was for me. But, you know, while Stewart has his detractors,
that'd be full of clauses.
I am very positive about signing, and I have to say, like, yeah. Ricky Stewart bleeds green. He loves his players. He loves the nation's capital. You will not find anyone that cares more about that club and its players than Ricky Stewart. And ultimately, you're not going to find anyone that can do that. And they're in a rebuilding period as well, where they're trying to develop. And people bring up you know, the stats and stuff. Look, he's been to a grand final. He's made the top eight a lot of times that he probably shouldn't have. And this year he's made them much more competitive than what they've got any right to with that roster. So he probably deserves a little bit of credit. I think that he has earned that. And he's a real pivotal part of that Raiders club.
Yeah, they're overachieving again at the moment, especially with the injuries they've got and White and leaving. You look at that roster on paper, especially the back line, you think that's a bottom four side in the NRL for sure. But he just seems to be able to instill a bit of belief in the club. And, he's, you know, that as you said, he bleeds green. Like he was there forever, except for his last two seasons. And he's been back there for a long time now, so he knows the culture of the club. And he seems to be able to get more out of players that you would expect to not get more out of, if that makes any sense. Like he's never really had a star-studded roster down there, even when they made the grand final, and he's getting more out of players that you at the start of that season you wouldn't have expected them to.
Yeah, I think it's a great signing. And it's, you know, a lot of people are critical of Ricky. I think that's more about how prickly he can be or his press conferences and whatever else. But, like, at least he's authentic. Like, even if I disagree with some of his...
Oh, you just love to see the theatre, don't you?
It's great theatre. I think he's pretty honest as well. But, you know, you cannot like Ricky Stewart, but for the Raiders, I think that's a pretty good fit. And you always got to ask yourself, well, who else are you going to sign?
Exactly.
And to me, no one can fit into that club at Canberra as much as what Ricky Stewart can. So it makes sense. Speaking about things that make sense, the worst kept secret in rugby league ever in the history since 1908, Wayne Bennett signs with the South Sydney Rabbitohs. It's a 3-year, $3 million deal. I looked at this and went, you know what, this is perfect for all parties. I think 3 years is good for Bennett. I think it's good for Souths. And as much as there is criticism of Wayne Bennett and how he leaves clubs and things and, you know, his success at times in recent years, like with teams like Newcastle and whatever, I don't think there's anyone else that Souths could have got. So I think it's worked out perfectly for them because I reckon that they would have been in dire straits if they didn't get Wayne Bennett. And Bennett is not just a veteran coach. He's the most experienced coach you can find. And he is a guy that can get the respect of players, change players' attitudes and change culture. And not many can do that. In fact, I'm going to go out on a limb and say no one could go into Souths and do that with the personalities and the players that they've got there. And that's also Bennett's experience of dealing with boards and executive level too. They will listen to him and he won't budge on that either. So he has more power than most coaches that are going to go into a club, and they need that at the moment throughout all the ranks of South Sydney. So I see it as perfect for everybody. But how did you see the Bennett signing?
Oh, I thought it was inevitable, and it's a fantastic signing for Souths. I mean, Bennett was a fantastic signing for the Dolphins to get him up there for 2 years and just get a bit of culture and a brand new club and, you know, see how Wolf goes in the future. But I've always thought there was a chance if the results didn't come for JD that then Bennett would come back again. And that's what's happened. He's proven before with the personalities in that club that he can get the best out of them and he can man-manage them better than anyone else can. And that's why they were successful under him. Even though they didn't win a premiership, they were still successful. On top of this, I wouldn't be surprised to see Sam Burgess come back, if it's not next year, it'd be maybe the year after.
Yeah, and that's a really good point because everyone just assumed that Burgess would come back now that JD got fired, but I don't think it was the case. I sort of thought he'd be thinking that there's still a fair bit of bad blood there because a lot happened with people that are still obviously in positions at South Sydney. And the players as well, like there was players he was critical of that maybe he thought, well, I don't know if I want to smooth this over or how I want to take this. And someone like Wayne Bennett coming in would be a really good buffer to say to Sam come back and he could make Sam into a coach there for the future. So it's a perfect signing. And I think that Souths are in a pretty big hole at the moment with their roster, with their culture, with their performances and with the decision-making throughout the club. And I did not see a way out of it anytime soon, aside from having a pretty long 5-year, 10-year plan. But Wayne Bennett is a way out for me. So I think it was perfect.
Yeah, especially as you said, to sign him on a 3-year deal, not like a 1-year deal with an option and all that sort of stuff. He's going to be there for the next 3 years. And you need 3 years to turn it around from where they are.
You do. And I mean, on the plus side, they didn't give him 8 years either when he would have been about 185 years old. So that's important as well. Like the US presidency, you want to make sure that the people you're putting in charge are actually going to be alive by the time they get there.
Yeah, not prodding him with a pool cue when he's on camera.
Sorry, Wayne, all good jokes. All good jokes. You're still probably one of the best coaches in the league. So well done. So just a quick break before we continue on to the next segment to talk about our fantastic betting partner for the NRL All-Stars podcast in picklebet.com.au. Go over to Picklebet, have a look. They've got fantastic odds. They've also got some great promos and offers that they put on very, very regularly. One of them this week I really like for Magic Rounds. They've got a few different player combo markets for try scoring. Three of the ones that are there that I think are great. Any two of Josh Adokar, Xavier Savage, Nick Kotrick, or Jacob Carras to score a try, $1.65. Now, I'm going to be all over this one because you've got four wingers there, and two out of those four, I reckon, are definitely going to score Bulldogs versus Raiders. So I like my chances at $1.65 on that one. Any three of Adokar, Xavier Savage, Kotrick, or Carras. So instead of two of the three, get three out of those. Instead of two out of the four, sorry, get three out of those four scoring, $4.25. And the big one, $25.80 odds. If you reckon all four wingers in that Bulldogs-Raiders game can score a try and there's going to be bulk points, almost 26-1 you get on that. That's a great promo to open Magic Round for this week up at Suncorp. And look, the Raiders and Bulldogs, it is a game where there could be a hell of a lot of points in it. So don't mind some of those special promos. You can find it under additional markets. So if you go into Picklebet, and you have a look at that game and you open up the Bulldogs versus Raiders, under additional markets, you'll see the try scorer combos, which is a special one for Magic Round that they've thrown up there. But they do stuff like that every week. So jump on Picklebet, have a look. They've got fantastic odds. So much of the time they beat some of the big bookies with their odds that they put down. And also, when you sign up, make sure that you use All-Stars as your promo affiliate code. All-Stars, that way they'll set up your account and they'll know that you've come from this podcast and they'll take great care of you. It also helps support the podcast as well, guys and girls. So, you know, if you do like a punt and you are going to try them out, make sure you do throw All-Stars because, look, you know, it's a free podcast. I do this advertising to help support it so the people out there don't have to pay anything for it and so I can continue to put the time in that I do. So thank you very much for supporting it. Jump on Picklebet if you like to have a bet. But as always, if you don't, make sure you gamble responsibly. Also make sure, is this a bet that you really want to place? For free and confidential support, you can call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au. Now, on to positive pitch. This segment, we have to talk about something positive. Magic Round is upon us. Now, we spoke last time about how good Anzac Round is and how positive it is that the league puts that on. It is super positive. It's such a great concept that we have Magic Round. It's always great in Brisbane as well. You get people travelling from all over Australia to go to it. So many of the other podcasters are all going to it. I'm super jealous that I don't get to. But look, it's a big party and it's a great rugby league carnival, basically. I just think that they've done really well with going forward with that concept and also building it. I would like to see it moved around a little bit potentially, but it does have a pretty good home at Suncorp. So there's a good argument for it to be there. But it's something that the league has done really well with, and I think it's a really positive and everyone is excited by it. Even if you're watching it on TV, it's still like Magic Round, you know, you love it. And I always liken it to the days too, as far as attending. When I was a young kid, you know, one of my great memories was going to the Sevens for the first time when I was like 5 years old and a mate's dad saying, I've got these tickets to the Sevens and brought all the kids to it and stuff. And you just have football all day. And all night, and you're just watching like three or four games a day and stuff. And it's just great. And I just think that the NRL's done a great job introducing it and running with it.
Oh, 100%. Even like if it's something I really want to go to, we should organise it one year, Barnsley, to be honest. But it doesn't work out for me so far. In the last couple of seasons that they've had it, I've got other stuff on. But even like I was about to say, even when you're not up there, because the round's so compressed, like how many people are having barbecues and having their mates over and watching three games of footy in a row on a Sunday. And it's just a really good concept. It throws a lot of light on the game. And I know even internationally, the people that do like it, they always like Magic Round. And then you see a few YouTube things on it. And I wouldn't mind seeing it moved either. But everyone I know that's been there reckon it's the Brisbane's the go. Just that whole Caxton Street's just pumping, all the cafes and pubs and everyone. Look, you imagine how many punters club trips and boys trips and all that sort of stuff going up there. There's a vibe. Everyone's up there on holidays and just the general vibe around the place would be fantastic.
Yeah, it's a good location for it. Like, I don't think you couldn't do it in Melbourne. And if you're doing it in Sydney, unfortunately, it's going to be a core stadium going out to Homebush, and it's just not a great place, Homebush. I'm sorry, as far as I go to so many concerts out there and events, whatever. It doesn't have enough there it's a bit of a pain for a lot of people to get to.
And it's not a great ground to watch footy from, Barnsley.
No, it's not. And like, if you're going to stay there, you know, it's not great if you're travelling and you're staying there. And if you want to stay in Sydney CBD, it's a bit of a trek to go and get there. And it's just not great. I mean, there is an argument for probably Allianz, but it doesn't have the capacity of somewhere like Suncorp either, even though that is in a spot that's pretty good for the city and everything else. So, Brisbane has been a really good host city for it, and Suncorp's a great stadium for it as well.
That's the only problem with Melbourne is you'd have to play at the MCG, and then I don't know if you'd pack that out. And if you didn't pack it out, it wouldn't look, you couldn't play it at Amy Park or Marble. So,
and you're relying on, you've got to rely on a lot of the locals to get into it as well. And whilst, Storm fans, how many of those are going to, you can't rely just on the travellers. So, but our magic round, can't wait for it to start this week, except no Thursday night footy is going to be a bummer, but, I'll persevere. Spray of the week, so this is going to be a big one. I put the caveat out there. Guys and girls, everyone that listens to this podcast, I don't mean to make the spray of the week about referees and officials every week. They're do it to themselves. They do it to themselves, okay? We had some incredibly poor decisions on the weekend once again. I'll run through two of my favourites. Papali'i for the Tigers tripped someone in a scoring situation.
That's a professional foul.
To stop someone from scoring a try. The bunker has looked at it and said, we don't bin for trips, so it's okay. In their head, I'm sure that's what they said. It was a predetermined decision without looking at the context and saying, this is the definition of a professional foul because it is a try-scoring situation. Someone has used foul or illegal play to stop a try from being scored by tripping someone over with a blatant trip. It was done on purpose with a leg stuck in. It's a sin bin every day of the week. Now, what's worse is...
I was about to say it gets worse.
Oh, the coverage that you get, you just get embarrassed as a rugby league fan. The Manly slap penalty on Turbo. Like, as they said on the coverage, it wouldn't have bruised a grape. The fact that, it wasn't even swinging in, the arm was just there and Turbo fell into it and it was a brief touch on the face. And as was said on NRL 360, I will give a media outlet credit. They brought up the point, if you're looking at any head contact, it happens 100 times a game. So don't tell me we can have 100 challenges a game and anyone gets their head touched, it's going to be a penalty because it's rubbish. It's true. And that was absolutely ridiculous. Funnily enough, Ennerslie has come out and said he's now instructed the bunkers to use discretion on the impact of and the force of the head contact. That was already there, guys. Don't let them pull the wool over your eyes. Yeah. It was already there. 3 weeks ago, we had a swinging arm go across the face of Lindsay Collins for the Sydney Roosters. It split his lip open. It was hard enough, yet it was labelled by the bunker, which we heard, incidental contact, no penalty. It was already there. They just did it wrong once again. So it's absolutely bizarre how bad we can keep getting these decisions. Finally, there's a bit of groundswell about it. But it goes to the penultimate decision at the summit of this terrible shit decision mountain that we have on the weekend that is going to be the basis of this spray. And that is the Harry Grant sin bin. Now, he's gotten out of this. So that is how stupid the NRL and the officials look. He has gone to judiciary and $400,000 fine. Good on him in the Storm because they shouldn't have copped it because there was nothing that happened. It was that was borderline a penalty. I would whinge about a penalty all day. And to go from a penalty that's not a penalty to a sin bin, it's just absolute incompetence. You cannot do that in a rugby league game. It is ridiculous. Obviously, Harry Grant won, unanimous decision, got thrown out.
And did that come from the bunker, that decision, or was it the on-field ref?
That was the bunker. So yeah, I will finish my spray by saying I'd be really careful spraying actual referees, everyone, because often they just have to go with the bunker call, and the bunker has said it was dangerous impact to the kicker's legs, and they've looked at the replay a million times. Now, of course, looking at the replay a million times, people obviously think, well, you should know full well, not having adjudicated on that live, that there was nothing in it. Harry Grant's not even looking at his leg. He just walked past him and there was hardly any touch.
The on-field ref would have even noticed.
So I will put to you, that is the worst decision in the history of rugby league as far as sin bins go. The worst ever.
Have to be. It was ludicrous. You saw the shock on Harry's face. I think they would have been, when they blew the whistle and said penalty, they would have been going, what, you're kidding, aren't you? And then 10 in the bin for that. Like, that is, what? Where do we want this game to go, Barnsley? Like, seriously, we understand why that rule's in place. But he barely even glanced him. It's a contact sport. You're going to bump into someone from here. Like, that's all it was. It was just a bump in passing when, you know, there was nowhere. He wasn't even focused on his legs or anything. He wasn't even ever attempting to go near him. He just glanced him. That's all it was a glance. They're getting sin bin for a glance now. It's absurd. And you go back to that Tigers game and you touched on Papali'i. A lot of, yeah, sorry, no, you started on Tigers forums, but I was watching that, and as soon as I watched it, I he's in the bin for sure. Now, not because of the trip, because it was a professional foul. And then, even worse to that, you throw the judiciary into it on top of that, and he's been given a grade two and actually suspended. That's the first time I've seen anyone suspended for a trip in a bloody long time. But the trip itself was no worse than any you've seen any other week. It was just in that particular play, it was a professional foul every day of the week. Another two in that Tigers game. Alex Seyfarth came running out and almost took the player's head off, got it penalised, and didn't, look, with a swinging arm, got penalised, didn't go to the sin bin. Literally, it was like 2 minutes later, Saifidi came in and hit one of the Tigers players, fairly similar, but it was a shoulder, not a swinging arm. He went to the sin bin. And I can't keep up with what they're doing. I seriously can't.
I honestly think that we saw on the weekend in black and white the referees and officials involved in a rugby league game for the NRL are predetermining a lot of their decisions rather than looking at...
The bunker needs to back off.
They're not looking at context per se. They're not saying, no. You know, they're looking at, like, the trip was a perfect example. They're looking at, that's a trip, I can't send, what do I do? Like, they're almost looking down the lines on, what do I do for a trip? Okay, it's not a sin bin offence. Rather than looking at it in context, going, well, in my opinion, that's a try-scoring situation, so that's a professional foul. So actually, that has to go to the bin, yeah. It's just crazy. And
that's what I mean. They made up for the mistake by giving it a grade two and suspending.
Do you think that the amount of rule changes and things like this NRL edict that they want to use discretion now on those high shots and things like that's going to be as clear as mud again? Like, it seems like we're just putting band-aids on week after week and changing rules and tweaking rules when we just need to fix this and simplify it and make it easy for the officials. Because I'll finish the spray by saying, Perso, I feel for the officials because their job is already hard. I think that we have made it harder and we're setting them up to fail, including in the bunker, who, yes, shouldn't be making some of the mistakes that they are, but at the same time, we don't know all the pressure being put on them behind the scenes where they've got all these sheets and stuff saying 100%. You have to change these rules or change these interpretations week to week.
And then they're cracking down on this one this week and this one next week. You don't know what the bunker gets briefed at prior to the ground starting.
So it's very hard. We should finish off on another positive, okay? Hopefully the NRL fixes this, but under Maxwell and Annesley, I highly doubt it at the moment.
Yeah.
Legend rewind. Rocket Rod Wishart. Used to love Rocket Rod in the 90s. He was almost a one-club player, was born in Gerringong, ended up playing locally, and then went into the Illawarra Steelers. And then obviously when Illawarra merged with St. George, he played the end of his career with the St. George Illawarra Dragons. I have so many fond memories of him. He played a lot more representative games per se than what I think people give credit for. 22 games for New South Wales, 17 games for Australia. Between 90 and 98, he was in representative teams constantly. He was a winger that was, he wasn't big by any means. He was fast. He could score a lot of tries. But he was also pretty tough, which a lot of people don't remember. Like, he could take some good hit-ups and things. Certainly, you had those other wingers like Michael Hancock at the time that would take a lot of hit-ups and stuff that you see these days that you didn't get back then. Wishart would do that. He wouldn't shirk the work. In fact, when the Dragons were in the grand final against the Melbourne Storm, he was actually, in 99, he was actually on the bench because he was playing as a bench player at that point, not on the wing. And I just have so many fond memories, and I think the best ones for me were the Kangaroo Tour ones because he would absolutely carve up teams multiple times. He scored 22 points in a Kangaroos game. He also was a very noted goal kicker as well and scored over 1,000 points in his career. So Rocket Rod Wishart, what do you remember about that great man?
Oh, he was one of my favourites growing up. Especially, he's played with Illawarra and they were battlers for a lot of years, and then they started to get a good start going in sort of mid-90s. And so at that time, they were sort of everyone's sort of second team. You wanted to see the Steelers go well. And going to New South Wales and Australia, he was always one of my favourite players. such a consistent player. He never, I can't remember him ever having a bad game. He was just always consistent. And as you touched on, like, it wasn't a done thing to do for all wingers back in those days. And he wasn't the biggest winger cutting around, but he'd take the hard yards all the time. And that's why he was in the rep sides. And he was a great finisher and a good goal kicker. It's quite a timely rewind this week when his young bloke had a pretty good game for the Storm this week. And
That's what reminded me of him.
He looks so much like him, doesn't he? But you can see that same tenacity in his young bloke, because he just gets thrown around at Storm, fills in anywhere, plays a good game wherever they put him. Like, he's got that same tenacity in him. He's just a footballer, just a worker. And, he was such a good player. I used to love watching him play. And as you said, one club team, almost was a one club team because of the merger. But he's a nice fella too. I actually met him in Kiama years ago now when I was on holidays. He was still cutting around down there. He got to approach him and have a chat. And, you know, he was a fantastic player.
He was also a guy that had, I mentioned the prolific scoring, but 78 tries. And he had that across 177 games. So that's a really good strike rate.
Yeah, it's a fair strike rate.
And also 390 goals. So 1,092 points overall. There's not that many players that have scored over 1,000 points. Probably someone who was crippled a little bit by injuries, and certainly that's what ended up finishing him off at the end. But look, I loved him. And I also, the other thing that I remember, it's funny sometimes too, Perso, that you remember some of these legends of the game, particularly when you're talking 20, 30 years ago. And a lot of them have another player that you associate them with that comes to mind straight away with them. And I always remember Wishart, and then at the same time, Paul McGregor. You know, they had some really good players in those back lines at the Illawarra Steelers, but always remember McGregor and Wishart, and they both ended up in a lot of New South Wales teams and Kangaroo teams together, those two from Illawarra.
Yeah, for sure. They came in pretty much at the same time and then progressed to the same level at the same time. And you had Brett Rodwell there as well in between them. It was good because the Steelers were battlers for years, and then they sort of had a lot of juniors coming through, and they were all juniors, all those guys, and a lot of other guys that we're talking about. And then they started to be a pretty solid team. So, yeah, I used to love watching the Steelers back in those days. Them and the Bears, actually, to be honest. There's a struggling Tigers fan. I used to love him. One of the first picked in New South Wales all the time. Well, you didn't even flinch about his spot. It was just always there, you know, and Australia as well. And that's a fair credit, because there were some good wingers running around in that time.
Yeah, well, I was about to say, actually, he actually lost his kangaroo jumpers a couple of times because Willie Kahn made his debut to play alongside his Brisbane Broncos teammate, Michael Hancock, to have both the wing spots for Australia. And Kahn and Hancock were both really good wingers. And there were some other ones running around as well. And it was obviously notable, like we've mentioned many times, Edinghausen was another guy that was pushed onto the wing as well because of other spots. So he often got wing spots too. So
yeah, so was McGaw at times.
McGaw as well. So there were some fair wingers running around. And the fact that he played so many rep games probably shows how good he was.
Yeah, sure. I suppose that New South Wales side, I don't think he ever got dropped out of that once he got in. He was there for the duration unless he was injured.
Oh, well, Rocket Rod Wishart. I used to love watching him play, and he had a great career. So well done to Rocket Rod. Watch some old Illawarra games if you haven't seen much of him. Don't watch the St. George year. Watch his Illawarra years, because I love that jersey as well, the old Illawarra Steelers jersey. So go get into it, everyone. But that is the podcast. Thank you so much for jumping on, Perso. Always a pleasure to talk rugby league with you, and enjoy Magic Round, mate.
Yeah, it should be good. The missus is going to Sydney for a work thing this weekend too, so I'll be able to sit at home and watch every single game without any duress. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, don't whinge about not getting to go then, because you just about like get to go anyway then, sitting at home all weekend watching it uninterrupted. Better than what I'm going to have, that's for sure. So everybody that wants to listen to the podcast, you can jump on and download, stream. Make sure you subscribe, iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify. Also for the international audience, rugbyleague.com. Steve Mascord and co running a great 24-hour rugby league online radio station. Just Talking Rugby League. We are on that every week as well. And certainly jump on our partners. All of them use All Stars as your promo or referral code, and you get great deals, offers. All will take great care of you. You can jump on to bonusbank.com.au. Great side hustle. Great tools to learn how to beat the bookies. And our favorite bookie, picklebet.com.au. as well as oneworldcareer.com.au for your freight and shipping needs for your business or who you work for, and you can enter into that great draw as well at the moment if you jump on there. So thanks very much for listening, everyone. We'll be back next week with the Supercoach episode. We'll be back next week as well with another Talk and Footy. Until then, enjoy Magic Round. No doubt it'll be magic, and I can't wait to talk all about it again real soon.
Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star.